Right now, wind is from the west at 8. We have 50 degrees in both Racine and Kenosha this morning. It's 49 for Burlington, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva. For WGTD News, I'm Dave McGrath. 10 past 8, the morning show with Greg Berg is next. Support for the morning show comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe. Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. WGTD is also supported by Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation, designed to allow students to uncover and ignite their potential. Carthage is honored to welcome to its campus for a special performance free to the public tomorrow night at 7:30, Milwaukee Symphony Concertmaster Frank Almond, playing his priceless Lipinski Stradivarius violin, which was built 300 years ago. This concert is part of a series of recitals to celebrate that impressive milestone. And we welcome you to the Monday morning show on WGTD HD, Kenosha, Racine, Elkhorn, and Lake Geneva, NPR News and Classical Music on your gateway to public radio. I'm Gregory Berg. It's with a somewhat heavy heart. It is with a somewhat heavy heart that I begin Monday's morning show. As many of you know by now, Carthage College suffered a shocking loss last week with the sudden and unexpected death of former football coach and assistant athletic director Tim Rux, someone who was very much admired and beloved. His funeral service at Carthage was Saturday afternoon, and an extraordinary outpouring of compassion and sympathy and respect and honor for this man was demonstrated by the many, many hundreds of Carthage graduates, most of them former football players, who swarmed back to Carthage to be present for this occasion and to offer their own tributes in whatever way they could to Coach Rux, who meant so much to them. I had the pleasure of interviewing Coach Rux on several different occasions on the morning show. Today, I want to replay for you, in a sense, the happiest of those conversations, the conversation which we had way back in 2004, which came just after the Carthage football team enjoyed the finest season in the history of the college. So here is that morning show interview from 2004. With Coach Tim Rux. And it's a great pleasure to be sitting across the table today on the morning show with Tim Rux, who is the head football coach at Carthage College. The last time Coach Rux was with us, it was really at the suggestion of a listener who saw in the Racine Journal-Times a column about Coach Rux and the way he ran the Carthage football program with such integrity and with such devotion to academics as well as athletic excellence. That column was written at a point in time when the Carthage football team was not doing as well on the field as certainly they hoped, and they were in the midst of a losing season. And we had a conversation at that time, and it was a conversation I enjoyed. I am so glad that we can have Coach Rux back under very different circumstances today, talking not only about the way in which this football program is run, but the incredible turnaround which occurred this year when the Carthage football team very decisively won its conference title and went on to the national playoffs and playing with great distinction, even in this most recent game, which is, of course, their last of the season, a hard-fought loss to Mountain Union College. Mountain Union College, one of the phenomenal success stories in really the history of college football. Carthage stood their ground, even had the lead at a couple of points, finally came up short in a 38-20 game in the Division III national playoffs. Carthage can be really proud of what it has accomplished over the last few months, and under these very different and very happy circumstances, we welcome back Coach Tim Rux to the morning show.
Thanks, Greg. It's great to be here.
Good to have you here. And it is good to be talking with a very different set of numbers in the win-loss column. That's for sure. First of all, going into this season just concluded, did you have any sense that this incredible turnaround was possible or that it was going to happen as completely and decisively as it did?
Not as big as it ended up, I have to be honest with you. I knew that we'd be significantly better. We were 3-7 last year, and I felt that we could have a chance for 7 wins, maybe 8 wins if things went our way. I really believed that, but to win the conference championship, getting 3 deep in the playoffs, I think that really surpassed everyone's expectations. Coaches in our conference picked us to finish 7th out of 8 teams, so I think we surprised everyone but ourselves a little bit.
Very good. What led you to think that things were going to be better this season? Were there particular personnel additions or just depth chart? Or what was giving you confidence?
Oh, it's the kids. They did it themselves. I challenged them last February when we started our off-season program. I remember telling them the success of our season next fall will be determined by what we do in the winter and the spring. And we challenged them hard. We set up a unique off-season program. Being Division III, we can't coach them in the off-season. And we set up something we called the Redmond Challenge, and we picked 7 teams with 2 group leaders on each one. They had a draft, and they picked players for their team. So we had 7 teams, and it was a challenge. There was points added or deducted for good or bad things you did on your team. If you missed a workout, you lost points. Late for a workout, academics tied into it, community service tied into it, and they bought into it and they took it really, really seriously. Mm-hmm. And what happened was, we got a lot more work done than we had. It built accountability to each other, which I thought was missing. I thought our kids were accountable to the coaches but not to each other, and it really built leadership into our program. Mm-hmm. And it just escalated. I'd be sitting in my office and I look out and there's the linebackers up running the hill. They just really, really worked hard. And I told them, I'm old-fashioned. I believe that before you can ever achieve anything, you really have to pay a price. And I think our kids paid a price, and they felt they deserved to get something out of it.
Hmm. Just so our listeners understand, as a Division III school, I guess that means that this workout with the linebackers, that was something that you couldn't run or any of your coaches couldn't be there.
Right. At Division III, you can't make any off-season workouts mandatory except for a 4-week period. Hmm. There's only 4 weeks that we can actually coach them in the weight room and do agilities and that kind of stuff. So the bulk of it, with J-term, and that's an 18-week period. So for 14 of the 18 weeks, they were running themselves.
So it's a self-directed effort then.
We set it up for them, said, here's what you got to do. And just we, as coaches, picked who we thought were the 14 best leaders on the team and said, you got to get it done. But it's sort of neat. If a guy doesn't miss a workout, it's not go to Coach Rux to tell him a guy missed a workout. He had to go to that group leader. Mm. And so those guys really, those 14 guys, I thought really learned some leadership skills that was sort of unique at that age.
Very good. When does practice begin in the fall? I assume it's the late summer.
Yeah. This year it was August 16th. You get 24 practices before your first game that you can do, and so 16th was our starting date, so essentially 3 weeks before school started.
Now, did you have a sense even on August 16th and 17th and 18th that things were going to be different this time around?
Yeah, I sensed real early on a sense of urgency in our guys and a sense of passion in the team. I thought we went about things more physically. I sensed that right away. I sensed our kids were hungry. And I sensed that right. I sensed it in the first practice. I mean, we were doing running drills. And just a general competitiveness that was kicked up a notch over previous years.
The regular season itself was really incredibly successful, with one exception, one loss, which, if I remember correctly, was a shutout.
Yeah.
Can you just tell us briefly, I mean, we're going to mostly talk about great things and gratifying victories, but what happened with that lone loss during the regular season?
I really don't know. I mean, Augustana is a great football team. One thing that people don't understand is how close five or six of our teams are in our league. Millikan, Illinois Wesleyan, Augustana, North Central, Wheaton, Carthage, any of those teams can beat each other on any given day. And I said this before the season started. I said, I think it'll come down to the team that'll win the league champion will be the team that takes most advantage of home field and who doesn't get injured. And injuries to us were very minimal this year, and we played very well at home. Augustana, we just got off to a bad start and just couldn't recover. It was just one of those games, and they're a good enough team that they had got momentum early in the game, and we just couldn't recover.
When you came on the morning show the first time around, and we were talking about that season which had just completed, I remember you talking about the most painful loss of the season, which I'm pretty sure was to Augustana, a really close loss where you felt like you guys should have won and could have won and didn't win. And I remember you saying, it was in the course of us talking about game films, you actually on that occasion put the films away and your team actually dispensed with the usual practice of looking at the game films because you felt like that was such a dispiriting loss that you just had to put it behind you. So Augustana has not been fun over the last couple of years, I guess.
No, we've had trouble with them. I mean, that loss you were just talking about was an overtime loss. And then, to get shut out 30-0, it was hard. But we bounced right back, obviously.
Yeah, that was one of the really astonishing things. In some ways, it felt to us following you that following game, whatever it was, wherever it was, that in many ways might have been the linchpin of the whole season. I mean, if they had not bounced back as they did,
right,
this could have played out very differently.
Right. I knew it at the time. If we didn't bounce back, things would, like you said, would go differently. But when we bounced back, I knew we had a chance. People say, well, what was the key point of the season? I think coming back against North Central after the Augustana loss, and North Central is a 7-3 football team. They're a very good football team. In fact, I said after the game we may have just beat the best team in the league. But to me, that was the turning point of the season, the rebound from the loss to Augustana, plus playing the game with Mike Sharp, who was our second-string quarterback because Fernie Garza got hurt against Augustana. So we beat him with our second-string quarterback. And to me, that's when that was the key point of the season. And that right there gave our kids a lot of confidence, and it told you a lot about the character of the team.
You mentioned the fact that although Fernie Garza went down briefly with an injury, that basically this was a team not very hard hit by injuries at all. How much of that is luck? How much of that, on the other hand, has something to do with how hard they worked in the off season? I mean, does that play a part?
There's always a little luck involved, but I don't think there's any question it has a lot to do with what we do in the off season. We do more than just lift weights. They stretch, they run, they do agilities, and our guys are pretty much in shape year-round. They're not in game shape in March, but they're in pretty darn good shape. So the only time they're really off is between now and January, and usually that we were done 3 weeks ago, so it's even a shorter amount of time now. But we are always running, and we're always keeping in shape, and I think that a big part is that they're in very, very good shape.
For those of you just joining us, we're talking today on the morning show with Tim Rux, head football coach at Carthage College, talking about a phenomenally successful season which just completed, a season which included a hard-fought conference title, won in very convincing fashion, and then several very, very positive appearances in the national playoffs, even this most recent game and final game, which was a loss, a very impressive effort by the Carthage Redmen. Coach Rux, we should, although I'm impressed at how you take pains to really spread out the credit and talk about this team and the dynamics between them, it probably is important for us to talk about a couple of the players who made a really exceptional and extraordinary contribution to this success. One of them would be this incredible running back, Dante Washington.
Yeah, he was obviously a big part of it. Dante right now is in Cancun. He's playing Saturday. He'll play in the Aztec Bowl, which is the Division III All-Star game. He got selected by the American Football Coach Association. They take 42 of the top players in the country, and they go down to Cancun for a week and play an All-Star team from Mexico. So that's a great honor for Dante. Mm. And, you know, solidifies him as one of the top players in the country. So he'll play there Saturday. But, you know, he was our go-to guy. He set an NCAA record this year for the most carries in a season. So obviously we weren't afraid to use him. But, you know, I always say if you got a horse, you got to ride him. We rode Dante pretty good. He's just tough, durable guy. And he was the centerpiece of our offense.
Yeah. He reminded me of one of my favorite running backs from my high school years, which was Franco Harris of the Pittsburgh Steelers, mm-hmm. in the sense of him not being exactly fancy,
right.
but just able to get the job done in game after game after game.
Yeah. I think the most amazing stat about Dante Washington, you know, he broke his own single-season rushing record this year. So he had it last year, and then he broke it again this year. But Dante Washington has carried the ball in 2 years 767 times in 2 years.
Hmm.
And in 767 carries, he has only fumbled the ball twice. That's an absolutely amazing stat and tells you the reliability of the guy.
Yeah. That reminds me, too, that one of the real keys to your success this season was causing turnovers. And not turning it over the ball and causing turnovers in other teams and often at very crucial moments and often in ways which would put points on the board for Carthage.
Well, you know, I think it's, you know, it's just general in nature. When people talk about football, their first thing goes to offense. Our defense is incredible this year. We lead the country in turnover ratio at 34. That means we've gotten 34 more turnovers than we've turned the ball over. That's got to be a record. I don't know the exact stats. I should have brought a stat sheet with me, but we had unbelievably amount of defensive touchdowns scored. Brandon Fox, Brett Barnes are two of the best defensive players in the league. Jason Kalinowski was an all-conference guy. Mike Polkowski was an all-conference guy. Those four guys were first-team all-conference, and I think Brandon Fox and Brett Barnes are on the all-region team, which means they're up for All-American right now. So, you know, our defense, to me, was the key to our team. And I think any player and any coach on our team will tell you that. They don't, you know, offense always gets the headlines and people talk about Dante, and Dante was a great player. But, you know, you can talk to Mount Union coach. All he talked about was our defense and how tough it was on him to prepare for and stuff like that. So probably more exciting as I talk about my defense is 10 of those 11 starters are coming back. So that makes you rest a little bit easier in the winter.
Absolutely, absolutely. As a coach, do turnovers just happen, or I mean, what do is the way these guys play the game bring about these turnovers? I mean, are there specific techniques that make those turnovers happen?
Well, it starts with, first of all, that's the number one thing Greg Etter, our defensive coordinator, talks to our kids. So it's a built-in mentality and approach. We got to get the ball. We got to get the ball. We got to get the ball. He's always talking about that. And then we actually practice them. There are drills that they do over on defense, ball stripping drills, you know, all sorts of there's about four or five different drills that they practice getting turnovers.
Hmm.
He gives out awards after every practice if you get a turnover. They keep a big board, and they put a you got your name, and every turnover you get in practice, you get a Carthage sticker on the board, and they keep track and have a contest. So it's a built-in mentality. And without all those turnovers, again, we're not in the position we are. They did a great job with it.
It's probably good to talk about that, because I think people that don't know football particularly well probably sometimes misunderstand turnovers as sort of a that most often they have more to do with just carelessness on the part of the person carrying the ball. I mean, that it's a mistake somebody made versus a turnover that has been caused by good play, aggressive play on the defense. And sometimes, too, just watching on TV or from the stands, a turnover will look like it's very capricious, kind of accidental, and once in a while they are. But you're talking about a different kind of turnover, which is really caused for a reason.
Right, you're talking techniques that we teach to get footballs. You know, different ways to strip the ball and come up a ball and come down on the ball. I mean, it's practice and it's taught. So it's actually just not the offense make a mistake. It's a technique that they've been coached to do.
How about size of your linemen? I mean, how did your guys stack up just in sheer size and strength compared to the linemen which they had to line up against this year?
Well, I think that before you talk about size, I think strength is more important. Our guys, for the first time since I've been here, I could say throughout our team, our strength was as good as anyone's. There was always two or three teams that they were bigger, stronger than us. We had some teams, a couple teams that were bigger, but not as strong. Our overall team strength was very good. Our size of our defensive linemen are much smaller than other defensive lines, but that's by design, because we're a blitzing, moving, running defense. We're looking more for runners than we are size. And then our offensive linemen, we probably averaged about, 260, 265 pounds in line. So we're pretty big up front. But there were a couple of bigger offensive lines. But, again, with our schemes, we're looking more at athleticism and footwork. You got to have some size to go along with it. But I think the best thing about our offensive linemen, besides their strength, was they were very athletic and had good feet.
As this season progressed, one of the things that was interesting is some of the victories were convincing victories, and some of the victories were, what would we call them, scrappy victories. I mean, where we'd see this over and over again in the paper, where you'd say basically, we found a way to win. Right. I mean, but it wasn't always pretty.
Well, 5 of our 11 wins were by a touchdown or less. I think that right there tells you about the character of the team. Last year, every close game we played, we lost. This year we won them. Our biggest victories came at home. No one came close to us at home.
Yeah, that's right, isn't it?
When we're a great home field team. We turned into that. And again, that's emphasis. We talk about it and whatever. But we on our field, Kenosha's turned out a place no one wants to play at. It's a tough place to play at Carthage right now. We won every game at home, obviously, and we won them big.
Right.
I mean, you know, Wheaton College comes in here, and you know, they've won 26 straight regular season games, and they beat us by 58 points the year before, and it's 31-7 at half. Our kids just believe that there's absolutely no way we're going to lose at home. And we didn't feel we were a great road team, but we sort of turned into one. We had 3 weeks in a row in the playoffs where we played awfully well.
So. Absolutely.
We wish one of those games could have been at home because, I think that the whole atmosphere would have been nice for the Carthage people and the Kenosha people to see, because it's a pretty neat experience.
Yeah. As the season progressed and these wins start mounting in the win column, what do you and your staff do with the obvious sense of excitement and enthusiasm that builds? I mean, is that excitement and enthusiasm ever counterproductive? I mean, do you ever find as coaches that you have to somehow kind of rein in the intensity in any sort of way? I mean, I think there are other sports where enthusiasm can turn into your enemy after a while, or it can turn into overconfidence or just somehow be counterproductive somehow. Maybe on a football team it isn't quite that same thing.
No, it's an emotional sport, and I think that helps you. Overconfidence was never a problem because our kids know full well how good this league is. I mean, we didn't win the conference championship until the last game of the year. I mean, there was a three-way tie going in there, so there was always you know, something to look ahead to. But we were very, as coaches, very consistent in our approach from game one to game 13. And we would meet with our guys on Sunday, and we would always say, you know, let's don't look back, and let's don't look too far ahead. In other words, too far ahead is anything past Saturday, and looking back is let's put the game behind us, win or lose. And we said we're just going to focus on that. We never changed. You know, we never talked about winning the conference championship until that week. It was the first time I ever brought it up to our team. If you look at our shirts that we issued in August, the back of the shirts say pride, personal responsibility, and daily effort. So our whole approach that we talked about as coach, we're not going to set goals like winning the conference or X amount of games to our team. We're just going to talk about what we bring to the table on a daily basis. You know, being accountable for having a good practice, getting to that meeting, getting something out of that meeting, putting some extra film work in on your own. And that was our approach, just purely day-to-day. I mean, and we spent a lot of time last spring talking about, you know, we'll never mention winning a conference championship. We'll talk about what we need to do that day and the next day toward our team's preparation for Saturday.
Well, that certainly played out awfully well then, as it turns out. Once the conference title was yours, then, of course, you headed off for what turned out to be three playoff appearances. Tell us, first of all, about each of those two victories which Carthage managed to secure.
Well, the first one, you know, I was curious because we put so much into winning that conference. You know, and in fact, that last week, and I challenged the guys, I said, the playoffs don't mean a thing. Winning the conference means everything. Well, we won the conference, and now we, you know, we want the playoffs to mean something.
Yeah, but, right. It wasn't quite everything. But
the first game against Alma was up at Alma. What impressed me most about that game is it was very, very clear from that week of practice, our kids were not satisfied. They were not satisfied just saying, hey, we're the conference champs. We're going to get a ring. And, you know, the playoffs, you know, they wanted this thing to keep going. It was a neat experience. I'll never forget when we came out the second time after warm-ups, there was 2 minutes to kick off, and we came across the field. Our fans literally went crazy. First of all, I couldn't believe the number of fans we had that went all the way up there. And it was really sort of bone-chilling how excited they were when we took the field. And it was a great football game. It went down to the last minute. We were behind. We score with a minute and a half left to win by four and hold them off. So it was a great thing. And all of a sudden, you know, you had to pinch yourself and say, now we're going to the second round. And we had to go back, get on the bus. That was Thanksgiving weekend. And I think it's neat. You know you're a good football team when you're playing over the holidays. And just to be practicing on Thanksgiving morning, you know, for a football player and a coach is a pretty special thing. And then we got on the bus on Thanksgiving Day and headed out to Wooster in Ohio, and a team that was undefeated and seeded higher than us. So we were the underdog going into that game, and we won the game on defense. I mean, we did, you know, it was a 14-7 game, and we had 60 yards of offense. And, you know, but that's what we are. We had one, we had a defensive touchdown and a kickoff return for a touchdown. And, you know, we just found a way to win. You know, we keep saying it, but we had tremendous confidence. And then we go to Mount Union, where absolutely no one in the world is, you know, going to give us a chance. They're 122-2 over their last 124 games. And our kids were never in awe of Mount Union all week. They were excited about playing them. They just wanted the opportunity. And really, truly, Greg, they believed they were going to win the game. That all sounds good, but I knew they believed it. And even when I was warming up, you know, I mean, it's natural to, you know, Mount Union. You know, I was like, that's just another team. It's just another team we're playing. And our kids really did. They played hard. And, you know, I mean, we led twice in the game. That was the first time Mount Union had trailed in a game all year. We gave them everything we had. In the end, they had a couple big plays that you know, the game was tied in the third quarter, and they had a couple big plays that turned into touchdowns. So the game was actually a lot closer than the score indicated.
Right. Well, and that's why they're 122-2, because, you know, they're capable of those big plays. One of the things I was told, I wanted you to confirm it, is someone said that the average number of points which they allowed, I think this season, was 7. So the fact that you guys scored 20 points on this defense was a real accomplishment in and of itself.
Yeah.
Is that close to correct?
Yeah, they'd only given up 7 touchdowns in 11 games.
Wow.
So, you know, and our offense did a great job. They'd only given up 43 yards a game rushing going into the game, and we rushed for 175. So there's no question Carthage didn't have to take a backseat to Mount Union. We didn't get the job done, and we didn't win the game, but we certainly didn't lay down for them. And I think people in Mount Union know we're a legitimate team.
Yeah. When I talked to President Campbell yesterday briefly, he was there. And one of the things he said was that he was so pleased that that Carthage played with such class. And then he quickly went on to say, and Mount Union College also played that game with a lot of class. So maybe you can help us understand what he was talking about.
Well, we have great kids. We can talk about being players all we want. But, you know, we've been on the road for 3 weeks, stayed in 6 different motels, ate in a lot of restaurants. Everywhere you go, all the people at the restaurants come to coach and say that it's the most respectful, well-mannered group of teams we've ever seen.
Mm.
And
wow.
when a game is played with class, there's no cheap shots. I mean, this was a national quarterfinal game, and class people, it just shows up. Mount Union is class. Carthage is class. There's no cheap shots, no yelling, you know, just good, hard football. And, you know, you see someone on the ground, someone helps them up, you know, that type of thing. No games being played, no mind games, just line up and play football. And after the game is over, I told our guys, I said, we've won a lot of games this year, and we've always won with class the day of, the day after, and the week after. And I said, we got to do the same when we lose, too.
Mm.
And I think there was just a mutual respect between both teams and both coaches that, you know, you just don't get into cheap things.
Yeah. I'm just curious. Especially for a game like that, how much do you get to talk with the Mount Union College coach, first of all, ahead of the game, and of course, we assume at least something really brief occurs on the field after the game? What kind of interplay is there, and is this someone, you know, you even knew?
Well, I would say a professional acquaintance of Larry Karras. I'm on the National Football Committee. And we run the playoffs, so it was nice not to run them, actually coaching them for once. But
yeah, right.
I've actually worked 5 of Mount Union's games in about the past 3 years. So I've been on the sideline for the Mount Union sideline for the last 3 national championship games working it. So I've gotten to know him through there. I talked to him on Monday before, and then Friday we have a meeting with all the game officials and, you know, structure for the next day. And he even asked me after it was over, he was going to go over to Canton to watch state playoff games, high school games over there. He even asked me if I wanted to go with.
Huh.
So, you know, and then we talked for a while that morning, you know. You know, I mean, that's the way it should be. It's a coaches' fraternity, and the kids play the games. And, you know, there's no reason not to talk or, you know, with another coach. I never understood people that don't. There are people that are like that. But, you know, it's not going to change the outcome of the game. You know, you just we're all in the same thing. We all work hard, prepare our teams, and the game will be played. See what happens.
So what did he have to say about Carthage once this game was played?
Well, you know, after the game, you know, he was, like, really sincere. He goes, you know, I was telling you the truth, and you have a very good football team. You gave us all we could handle today. He goes, I know it's not good when it ends. And he goes, I really, really hope that you guys are back in the playoffs next year. I'd like to play you again.
Hmm.
And I think he was sincere in that.
Very good, very good. How did it feel for the team? I mean, I think when certain observers viewing the incredible record of Mount Union were really kind of scared that, you know, Carthage might go all the way there to come away, you know, with a very stinging sort of defeat, maybe a real lopsided defeat, and of course that didn't happen at all. But the fact that it was so hard fought and close, was this a painful loss for you and the players, or how much so?
Because, like I said, we really expected to win. I mean, we really, really did. So it is painful. It's and I'm still feeling it this week. When that game ended, it was just a weird feeling I've never had because there were so many conflicting emotions. I was down about the loss because I thought we had a chance to win. And at the same time, I was so happy for our guys and how well they played and how far they come. And I told the guys after the game, I said, do not let this loss diminish at all what you've accomplished this year. So it was hard to be down about the loss because of what we've accomplished. And I think one of the lasting memories I'll ever have of this season was we brought about 1,000 fans out to Mount Union. And they were so loud and so supportive from the get-go. It was obvious. I mean, people in Mount Union were looking like, who are these fans and where did they come from? But to get to the locker room at Mount Union, you have to go underneath the tunnel in the stands, and those stands were right where our fans were. And when I talked to the team and they went to the locker room, I mean, they were cheering crazily for our guys. We had just lost a game, and they were going crazy. And it took us 10, 15 minutes to get through the tunnel and get off the field. I finally got over there, and, I mean, it was just to see how excited people were about our football team was really gratifying. There was guys that played in this program that have professional jobs that were crying. Everyone was just so happy. And as a coach, to see so many ex-players so excited after, you know, they've been out of the program 6-7 years in some cases, to be so excited was really gratifying to me. It meant that the program's important to them.
Yeah, very good, very good. You know, I was just thinking, I know that last year your football banquet was on November 30th because one of your players ended up missing it to be part of a music thing. I assume your football banquet hasn't happened this year yet.
Yeah.
That's one of the nice reasons for making the playoffs is it delays your banquet.
Right. It's traditionally the Sunday after Thanksgiving.
Right.
And that's our traditional banquet, so it was nice that it had to be moved this year. In fact, it'll be this Sunday. So it'll be a different type of banquet, obviously. Great reasons to celebrate. It's at the Radisson, and, you know, right now we have so many people coming, we have to limit family people that can come. So it'll be a big crowd, and we had great parent support this year. We have a parents club that's really unique, and they work very hard for our program in fundraising and that type of thing. And so they run the banquet. I actually just sort of show up and take the microphone and say some words, and so it's nice because I don't really have to run it. They organize it and set it up.
Very good. Well, the dust is scarcely settled, and of course you have to be thinking already at least a little bit about next season. One of the things that you mentioned is the fact that 10 of your 11 defensive starters come back. I mean, that has to be a terrific feeling for you.
Right, it is, because they're going to be more experienced. They'll have another off season, and they'll play with a great deal of confidence. Our challenge is, you know, only because you're returning. I've always thought only because you're returning doesn't mean you're going to be good. You know, you got to get better. And I think teams will play next year, look at Carthage a little differently. You know, we've always been, the hunter. You know, we were always trying to hunt down other guys. Now we're the huntee. Everyone's going to be shooting for us. And everyone's going to be bringing their A game when they play us. So it'll be a challenge because, like I say, you know, I don't know. You know, this league, you could make a case for anyone winning the conference. And but defensively, that's a nice place to start because that's the hallmark and the centerpiece of our football team, and it's a great place to start.
Who do you lose from your offense?
Well, we lose Fernie Garza, the starting quarterback, and we lose Dante, and we lose Matt Gannick, our fullback, and we lose 3 offensive linemen. So we feel very good about what we have in our program at those spots. I mean, Mike Sharp, our backup quarterback, started 3 games, including he won 3 games for us.
I'd forgotten it was 3 games.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's kind of money in the bank, isn't it?
Yeah, he's very talented. He's very good. Naaman Johnson played significantly at tailback, and he's only a sophomore. We've got a freshman, Sean Joswiak, at fullback that's played quite a bit. Greg Spencer's a fullback. And the offensive lineman, the smartest thing we ever did, we knew we had 3 seniors, and we had 2 sophomores who played regular rotation. Even though they didn't start, they played, you know, as many as 30 to 35 snaps a game, every single game. So they're actually very, very experienced. Hmm. And so we're not so two of the three we're really replacing with guys I don't think we're going to lose that much. And there's nothing against the guys graduating, but those guys are pretty darn good.
Wow.
And then John Binnish, our starting left tackle, will be difficult to replace. He's a two-time All-Conference guy. The guy started 43 games for us here at Carthage, never missed a start. He'll be difficult to replace. So, but we've got young people in our program we feel very, very good about. In a lot of ways, we're still a young team. Of our top 52 players, which was our travel team for the last 3 weeks, 12 of them are freshmen.
Wow.
Yeah. So if 12 of your top 52 are freshmen, you got to feel pretty good where you're at. We've got a lot of young talent on offense that we think can step in and play. Not that we won't miss those guys. I mean, you're not going to replace Dante Washington, plain and simple. You know, he's one of the top players in the country. But we've got a bunch of other backs in the program. I think it'll be interesting next year. I think we're going to be almost, whereas we've always had the leading rusher in the league for about maybe the last 8-9 years now, we'll play a lot of different backs, and we'll be into a lot of different personnel groups where, you know, we'll have this back doing certain things because he does that well, this back doing, you know, and so we've got some very talented backs, both tailbacks and fullbacks, that I think it's going to be fun and utilize their different abilities.
Very good. In the meantime, these talented athletes are also students, and I know that one of the things that you take justifiable pride in is the fact that you really try to stress that. In the midst of even this conference title season and appearances to the playoffs, were you able to keep that priority in place as well?
Oh, yeah. I think we do a neat thing. We take every full-time coach, and we divide up our team. And so each coach is responsible for X amount of people on the team, academically speaking. And every single Sunday night from the start of the school, and we were still doing it last Sunday night, every single Sunday night at 8:30 at night, we have what we call academic meetings. And we bring in all the freshmen and a certain amount of upperclassmen. And Gary Williams, who really runs our advising for the athletes, meets with them as a group. We have a book that they carry. It's called the Academic Game Planner. Chart their assignments, time management, all that kind of stuff is in there. But and then they meet individually with their coach. So I can open up their Academic Game Planner, and I can look what they have to do this upcoming week. I look at their grades that they got last week. I know they have a paper due in 2 weeks. I'll make sure they get started on it instead of the night before. So I can really look someone in the eye and say, as coaches, we are committed to academics. And, you know, most people, you're worried about game plans and X's and O's. We're sitting there on Sunday night going through their academic game planners with them. And so
worrying about calculus or whatever
yeah,
it happens
right.
to be. Yeah.
So I think it's you know, it's pretty clear to our guys that our coaches, you know, a lot of coaches give it lip service, but that we are actually involved in it and care about it. And, you know, we're not going to put up with a guy not going to class or, you know, whatever, not turning work in and that type of thing. But anything they have going on in their classroom, we know about in most cases.
Yeah, very good. Well, you have a lot to be proud of, this this great, great season, and, of course, the great, great work which your athletes do on and off the field and the way they've carried themselves through this great, great success. And we congratulate you and the whole Carthage football program on a job extraordinarily well done.
Thank you very much. It's been satisfying. I mean, it's just it's been a neat, neat thing, and I'm so happy for our guys. I'm really happy for the school, as excited as they are, and it's just been I tell our guys they won't know this till down the road, but they're going to have a lifetime of memories from this season. You know, now's the time you can start reflecting on it, and when they have children, they have grandchildren. I think this will always be a special time in their lives.
Well, we appreciate you joining us to talk about it, Tim Rucks, head football coach at Carthage College, joining us today on the morning show. I'm Gregory Bird. This conversation with former football coach Tim Rucks was recorded back in 2004, right after Carthage's football team enjoyed this extraordinary year of success. If you want to know more about Coach Rucks and about the amazing legacy which he leaves behind him, I would encourage you to go to the Carthage website, carthage.edu. And if you scroll down to the bottom of the front page, there is a photograph of Coach Rucks. And
You can follow the links to a special page in which there are all kinds of written tributes. Right at the top, and rightfully so, is a cavalcade of written tributes from a number of different former players who played football under Coach Rux. Right below that, written tributes from a number of different faculty colleagues. I'm among them, who've written some thoughts on what we remember about Coach Rux and what we admired about him. Right after that, tributes from some of his own classmates and teammates back from his days as a student at, for instance, Carthage College, where he was a double major in English and political science. There are written tributes as well from parents of players who were in the football program at Carthage and elsewhere. And finally, a series of written tributes from some of Tim Ruck's fellow coaches who admired so much the success which he enjoyed and the great integrity with which he coached the Carthage Redmen. So I encourage you to seek out those written tributes, which you'll find on the Carthage website, carthage.edu. Let's talk about some other morning shows which are going to be coming up this week. Tomorrow on the morning show, first, in an interview actually postponed from last week, my conversation with Sasha Martin, author of a really great book called Life from Scratch, a memoir of food, family, and forgiveness. Sasha Martin undertook an incredible project in which she cooked recipes from each and every country on earth and served them to her family, her very picky eater husband and very fussy daughter. And this memoir talks about that experience, and it's also a very tender account of her own difficult childhood. She was raised by a single mom for a number of years. That woman loved her very, very much, but ultimately Sasha was taken out of that home and placed into foster care. And it was a difficult road, and you hear about that in this book as well, Life from Scratch. Also tomorrow, you're going to hear my conversation with opera singer Deborah Voigt, who has just written a very interesting, frank memoir called Call Me Debbie, True Confessions of a Down-to-Earth Diva. Debbie Voigt was in the news a few years back when she was rather notoriously fired from a production at Covent Garden because the director believed her to be too large. She ultimately underwent gastric bypass surgery, slimmed down considerably, and her career went from strength to strength, but Debbie Voigt along the way also had to contend with some very debilitating addictions. And the fact that she was able to achieve the success that she did on the opera stage despite all that she was going through personally makes for a truly heroic story. So you'll be hear her conversation as well tomorrow. And I'll replay a portion of my conversation with violinist Frank Allman, concertmaster of the Milwaukee Symphony. He is playing a free recital tomorrow night on the campus of Carthage. It's a concert in which he will play his now famous Lipinski Stradivarius violin. I'm sure you know the story of January of last year when he was savagely attacked, tasered, after playing a performance in the heart of Milwaukee, and this priceless violin was stolen. Thankfully, it was recovered, essentially undamaged. Frank Allman recovered as well, and right now he is playing a series of recitals which commemorate the 300th anniversary of the construction of this beautiful violin. Again, this is a free concert tomorrow night at Carthage and Siebert Chapel, and you'll hear a portion of my conversation tomorrow as well. And by the way, Wednesday, I speak with Dr. Art Sear, offering analysis of current events. And on Thursday, Dr. Angelo Velandez, author of The Conversation, A Revolutionary Plan for End-of-Life Care. Dr. Velandez works with terminally ill patients and has come to believe that most patients can be spared a great deal of unnecessary suffering if more families would have frank and open conversations about end-of-life care. You'll hear that conversation on Thursday. Support for The Morning Show comes from Carthage College, dedicated to combining an environment of reflection and self-discovery with a culture of high expectation. More information at carthage.edu. Support also comes from Andrea's, a Kenosha tradition since 1911, a unique shopping experience time and time again, and that's what brings you back. And don't forget about Jack's Cafe, Andrea's, 2401 60th Street, online at andreasgifts.com. Headed for a high of 70 degrees today. This is WGTDH